Hello and welcome to T-12 from Fueling Endurance. I'm Alan McCubbin, I'm an accredited sports dietitian based in Melbourne and have almost 20 years experience working with runners, cyclists and triathletes to help them stay healthy and optimise their performance from complete beginners through to professional and Olympic athletes. And in this special six-part podcast series, we're going to document the journey of our guest athlete Brett as he prepares for his upcoming race, Ultra Trail Australia. We'll follow the final 12 weeks of his preparation, focusing on a different aspect of race day nutrition each episode. We'll check in each time with how Brett's gone from the previous episode and how his race nutrition and hydration comes together leading up to the big day in May. And if you're racing at Ultra Trail Australia, or you have a different running, cycling or triathlon event coming up in May or June, you can follow along with us, implementing the same principles and strategies that Brett does to help you succeed at your event. So let's jump straight into this one and learn a bit more about our guest athlete, Brett Kennedy. Brett Kennedy, welcome to Fueling Endurance and welcome to this special podcast series around race day preparation. It's a pleasure to have you here and really happy and privileged, I guess, to share your story as you prepare for the race. So maybe to start off with, do you want to tell us a little bit about your running, how long you've been running for, what sort of distances and events that you've done to date?
I'm in Mount Gambier at the bottom of South Australia, and we've got some pretty picturesque volcanoes and crater trails here. And it used to be kind of once every footy pre-season, you'd get up there and run up the stairs and up to the tower, and that was probably as much as I would run. You know, it was for what's there, I definitely underutilized it. But probably towards the end of 2019, I really just was like, right, running's the thing I want to do. You know, it's where I'm enjoying it. I'm getting fitter. I suppose it's with running, you start, you do a 5K and then you're like, right, I'm going to go for a 10K and half marathon. And yeah, so just kind of, you're always just chasing that next kind of little benchmark. And yeah, so the plan for me was to do my first ultra in April of 2020 at Five Peaks in Adelaide, and then COVID came along. So I did run and stayed local in that first year. And as part of that, did my first proper race in Murray Bridge. And then the Heisen 105 was on later in that year. Again, it was just had to stick to South Australia because I couldn't cross borders. And that was that's a 105K. So yeah, again, just that progression through distance. And throughout that kind of just consuming content, ended up on YouTube. And I learned about UTA. I knew other people that had been a part of it, so it definitely become a kind of a real bucket list race for me. And I remember, I think it was whenever the tickets are released later in the year of 2020, I had that. It was similar to when I used to go to music festivals where you'd log on and you'd be like, right, I got to get a ticket, and I'm like, right, if it goes through, I'm gone, you know. And that was because I understood UTA to have quite a bit of there's quite a lot of people trying to get involved. So I managed to get my ticket, and in 2021 was my first time to the Blue Mountains in Katoomba. I hadn't been there before. Very untrained, coming off some injury and probably shouldn't have been out there. But I just kind of went into that knowing no matter what happens today, I'm finishing, because it really was a bucket race event for me. One that I thought would be a one and done. And I've since gone back every year. So there's just something about those mountains and trails. Yeah, that just, I can't help it. And so 2022 was an altered course, so I had to go back 2023 to get a taste of that original course again, like running along Narrow Neck in the morning's amazing, Iron Pot. Yeah, just that loop, that first loop that goes out into the valleys, amazing. And so, yeah, went back last year, but unfortunately for me, after a very long journey up Nellie's Glen, Murray stopped at the Aquatic Centre and knowing what was to come after that. You know, it's a nice little run to see all the views, but then you head straight down some steep stairs to the valley floor, and I wasn't sure that I'd be able to get back up again. So so a week later I was like, right, booking accommodation in Katoomba. So yeah, in May this year will be first time actually staying in Katoomba and just getting to experience that side of it as well.
So Brett's preparing for his fourth go at the 100 kilometer Ultra Trail Australia this year. For those unfamiliar with the event, this is a 100-kilometer trail running event held each year in the stunning but very steep Blue Mountains west of Sydney, with 4,460 metres of elevation gain in that 100 kilometres. Now, the winning time for male competitors in this event is typically around 9 to 11 hours, depending on the year. That'll depend on the course, there's slight alterations sometimes, but also the weather conditions, how hot, how cold it is, etc. On the flip side to that, the cutoff time or the time limit for completing the event is 28 hours. And when I first spoke to him about sharing his journey on the podcast, Brett admitted that his greatest challenge for this has been experiencing severe nausea during ultra-distance events. Now, this was the reason that he was unable to finish the race last year, and it also caused a DNF at another race just recently. So that's going to be a big part of our focus over the next 12 weeks. Gut issues during ultra events are very common, and we've covered it from various different angles in past episodes of the podcast. Nausea is an especially challenging symptom to overcome, and I'm sure a lot of you listening to this have experienced this to some extent during your events. So we'll be tackling this from multiple different angles throughout the series and referring back to it quite a bit. But for this first episode, and with 12 weeks till race day, first I wanted to get an overview of Brett's day-to-day diet and how it complements his goals and training schedule. This is something I'm really big on. The goals determine the training plan, and the training plan determines the nutrition plan, not the other way around. Now, that's not to say there aren't specific nutrition requirements that need to be met regardless of training, and depending on the person, maybe specific dietary requirements that need to be catered for, but more so that the application of sports nutrition principles on top of those basic nutrition needs for health should be designed to complement your training plan. So in this first session, we spent a considerable amount of time going through Brett's current day-to-day diet and how that fits with his training schedule. Let's quickly hear from Brett about his current training schedule to get a feel for where he's at. And you'll hear some typing in the background of the audio here, and that's because this was a real nutrition consult and I'm actually typing down his training plan as he's telling me.
Monday is typically rest day. Tuesdays typically has recently been, there's a social group in town that does Tuesday nights. So normally it's about 10Ks of easy running. But I guess with where I'm heading for the next 4 weeks is a tempo focus block. So Tuesdays, Thursdays and Saturdays will be tempo based workouts split with easy recovery runs in between and a long run on the Sunday. These weeks will all work out to be, I reckon, in the 10 to 11 hour range.
And so the Thursday and the Saturday, are they both again about that same distance / duration? So I'm guessing about 45 minutes to an hour-ish?
For three workouts, yeah, split up with the recovery runs and then a long run on the Sunday.
Yep. And how long is long at the moment?
I think the first one's about 2.5 hours.
Yep. Do you know how long it will get as part of this? Like, can you see far enough ahead to see how long they're going to get to by the end?
Yeah. It's penciled in for 40Ks. So, yeah, it'd probably be around the 4.5 hours, I would think.
Yeah.
Depending on terrain.
Yep, cool. So after this, we went into quite some detail to capture what Brett's day-to-day eating is at the moment. Now, I'm not going to replay that whole conversation here as it doesn't really make for very riveting podcasting, us going back and forward about his daily diet. So I'm just going to cut quickly to a summary of that process. So firstly, Brett's weight is stable at the moment and his overall calorie intake looks pretty sensible for his situation and the amount of training that he's doing. He doesn't have any specific goals around body fat loss for UTA, so I'm not trying to plan for a calorie deficit here. And he does tend to drop a little bit of weight in the final hard training block leading into a race without consciously trying to do so. And that's a situation I think most people or a lot of us would be familiar with. Secondly, Brett's training is mostly in the late afternoon after work during the week. So this has implications for the meals and snacks that are going to have the greatest influence on his training performance. I like to think of the 2 to 3 meals / snacks prior to training as the key ones that either need to be fueled intentionally or not for that training session, depending on what the session is and, of course, the overall performance and body composition goals of the athlete. So in Brett's case, it's going to be lunch and that mid-afternoon snack that are most influential to how he then goes on and trains in that late afternoon period. Now, weekends is a different story, though, because his training comes sort of around 10 or 11 a.m. on a Saturday, which is the shorter session, and his long run on Sunday starts at about 6 or 7 a.m. So now the key meals and snacks for these sessions are going to be breakfast, obviously, or a pre-run snack, particularly on those early mornings. But it's also going to be dinner the night before and any evening snacks that he has sort of between dinner and bedtime. This is the time that he's either going to end up well-fueled going into a session or not well-fueled. So for the hardest sessions of the week, for him, it's Tuesday and Thursdays because of the intensity and Sunday because of the duration. These are the sessions where we're going to try and increase the portions of carb-containing foods in the meals and snacks leading up to those sessions. On the flip side, for other days of the week, we're going to decrease the amount of carbs at those meals just slightly so that the overall calories that Brett eats across the week stays about the same. And to compensate for any reduction in carb-containing foods, we're going to increase the portion sizes of veggies at these meals so the overall meal size and how full he feels after a meal stays about the same. Now for his in-session fueling, Brett's already doing a reasonable job of this in his long runs on Sundays. He's getting in about 50 grams an hour from a combination of drink mix. At the moment he's using Infinite Run Far, which is one of their stock formulas, and Precision Fuel gels. Now for the shorter sessions during the week, he's sometimes having one gel right at the start of the session to prevent bonking, particularly if there's intensity in there, or maybe a second gel if that session is up to 1.5 hours long. Now at this stage, we're not going to go and change the amount of carbs he's having in training too much, but we'll get to the sources of those carbs later in the episode. Now the next thing we considered was Brett's protein intake from a recovery and adaptation point of view. Now he's actually getting plenty of protein, partly because, as he admitted, he comes from a football and gym background before he got into running, so protein's probably always been something that he's been relatively conscious of. Now I've estimated he's eating about 2 to 2.5 grams of protein per kilo of body weight per day, which is certainly plenty of protein to meet his needs, but it's not super excessive either, so it's not something where I'm going, hang on, this is way too much, we need to reduce it. And as we heard in the most recent episode of the podcast, which was episode 73 with Assistant Professor Jorn Tromlin, the distribution of protein across the day probably isn't as important as we used to think it is. Now that said, Brett's protein is actually fairly well spread out across the day, and there's really no reason to change what he's doing here from a protein perspective, so we haven't really planned to make any changes there. Now of course I also looked at Brett's overall nutrition adequacy, things like fiber, iron, calcium intake, and there were certainly no red flags that were popping up there. So overall, I'm pretty comfortable that his current eating habits are adequate for his health. And putting it all together, really the plan for Brett isn't to really change much about his day-to-day diet, apart from just tweaking the distribution of carbs across the week just slightly to try and get more bang for his buck in terms of training performance. So once we discussed Brett's day-to-day diet, the focus then shifted towards race day. And the first things to get a handle on for race day are the logistical aspects. In particular, his choice of accommodation and his access to support during the race. Now, these two factors have massive implications for everything else that we're going to plan about Brett's race from a nutrition and hydration point of view. So understanding them up front is super important. Now, in previous years, Brett had actually stayed down in Penrith on the outskirts of Sydney and had a bit of a drive to get to the race venue on the day. But this year, he's decided to book accommodation in Katoomba, right in the heart of the Blue Mountains where the action is, the race village and so on. So I asked him about what he's got available in his accommodation, and here's the response.
I do have a fridge and microwave, and you know, I can't understand how important they are because I recently went away to an event that didn't have any of that. It was just at a ski lodge with two beds and a shower, which was nice, but I get there and a ski area in summer is not exactly, you know, bumping with lots of shops and that open. And yeah, it really was just made me realize how much I was missing a microwave and, and a fridge. A fridge was huge. I took everything in an Esky and tried to top up with ice because just to keep what I had, what I felt I needed. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And particularly for that, you know, that last day before the race where you want to kind of be pretty structured with what you eat, and there might be certain things that you want to deliberately eat more of or things that you want to avoid, and when you're kind of relying on eating out somewhere and you haven't got many choices, you're kind of a bit of a slave to what's available. So yeah, I think that's really good that you've got your own accommodation there, and you know there's shops nearby, you know, supermarkets nearby and that kind of thing, and you can kind of do your own thing from a food perspective, gives you as much control as possible, which is super, super helpful. So yeah, for people listening to this, if you haven't booked your accommodation for your next event, try and get an Airbnb or a serviced apartment or something that's kind of got full kitchen facilities like you'd have at home, because it's amazing how much difference that will make to your race day preparation, how much stress it takes off not having to run around trying to find a place that's open that'll serve kind of the types and the quantities of food that you want or you need for your race as well. Yep. Now, if you have already booked and you don't have a working kitchen in the accommodation that you've booked, consider things that you can take with you that might help. A rice cooker and a sandwich press can be a massive help in these kind of situations, as long as you've got the right power adapters, maybe if you're traveling overseas, for example. But if you can take these things with you, you can afford the weight and the space that it takes up when you're traveling, I definitely recommend doing it. It just gives you so much more flexibility and options when it comes to particularly that day before the race where you're trying to get in, you know, plenty of carbs without a risk of food poisoning, without a risk of having a meal that's really high in fat or protein that you don't necessarily want that time before a race. Now, the other crucial part of logistics for ultra distance events is access to food and fluids along the race course. Whether that's what the race organisers provide at aid stations, the use of drop bags, or access to support crew who can provide pretty much whatever you like at that particular point in the race. So here's Brett's situation for UTA this year. What's the situation for your race in terms of crew? Are you going to have crew that are available and can come to those aid stations, or do you have to be a bit more self-sufficient?
I'll be self-sufficient this year. I've always gone with my dad, who's driven out to the different checkpoints. This year he's been bitten by the bug. He's a cyclist, but he's doing his first 50K at UTA. So he's just fallen in love with the mountains as well, and just has seen some of the people go through, and he just thinks, well, if they can, I'll give it a crack. So I'll be hoping he goes well. But yeah, so for me this year, it'll be relying on drop bags.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So yeah, there's three aid stations along the course where you can have drop bags, or at least last year there was. So yeah, we can kind of plan around that a little bit. Drop bags, I think, are always, there's a little bit of risk and trepidation involved with them in terms of what happens if the bag doesn't turn up. What happens if it turns up and everything's spilt out of it, or been destroyed or smashed or squashed or whatever, or it's been sitting in the sun and is horrible by the time I get to it, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, personally, I tend to try and avoid drop bags where you can. Sometimes it's inevitable you have to use them. It's not really a choice. I guess the other thing to think about is, what are they actually providing on course at the aid stations that you don't need to put in a drop bag? And so it's certainly one of the things that I would generally suggest to people from, you know, sort of 12 weeks out to race day, is have a look at what's available at the aid stations for your event, and start to actually experiment around with those same products in training. Because if you find you can tolerate those, then you can use more of the stuff that's already provided there and be less reliant on the drop bags. Or at least it's a backup. If the drop bag goes pear-shaped for whatever reason, you can't find it, it gets lost or destroyed or whatever, at least you then know, well, I can just grab the stuff from the aid station that they're providing instead. And yeah, it may not be my first choice, but at least I know I can eat it, I know what it's going to taste like, I know I can tolerate it, that kind of thing. So for UTA, obviously being a UTMB-owned event, they all use the NAC products. I don't know how you pronounce it properly, NAAK, with, I think there's an accent in there somewhere. So they use the NAC electrolyte and the bars and waffles. It looks like in terms of gels, they use the winner's gels at UTA, or they have in the past. And then you've got a variety of other things, which, you know, you'll know from previous events, like chocolate and chips and snakes and lollies and that kind of thing. Soups maybe at some of the aid stations as well. And Coke at some of them possibly as well. But I think it's probably worthwhile if you can get your hands on some. And I know it's not the easiest product to get your hands on in Australia, is the NARC product, is to even just to have a bit of a play around with those. Did you try any of those at the races in the previous years?
I picked up a couple of waffles on the way. Yeah. I didn't try any of the drink mix. That is something. And at that point, yeah, it's only kind of, I suppose, been more recently that it's become more easily available in Australia, those products.
Mm.
I actually have had the intention, because they do, you know, they just do, I guess, bars and things as well. So has, you know, I do intend to get some and just try the different flavors. I'm not sure what will be available race day, but yeah, just yeah, get a feel for kind of the flavors and the consistencies and intensities of what they're working with. So
yeah. So as you've heard, Brett's having to be self-sufficient this year and will have to rely on drop bags for any nutrition that's not provided by the race organisers, or he's going to have to carry it with him for the entire race. For that reason, I've strongly suggested that he gets his hands on some of the products that will be supplied by the event organisers, because this will reduce his reliance on drop bags, or at least provide a backup if something goes wrong. Now, over the coming weeks, we'll work with Brett to try these different products out in the specific quantities that he'll use on race day. But for now, it's just a matter of experimenting in training to see what he does and doesn't like from those products. The quantities can come later on. So that's our first session completed with Brett. So to summarize, I've found out about his goals and challenges encountered in the past. I've reviewed his day-to-day nutrition and suggested some tweaks to get the most out of training. We've discussed the crucial logistical aspects of accommodation and race day access to food and fluids, and he's going away now to trial some of the race provided products to see if he's happy to use them either as his primary source of nutrition or as a backup for his own items. Now remember, if you've got a race coming up around May or June, you might like to go through the same steps we've just discussed with Brett. If you're not sure about the adequacy of your day-to-day diet for both health and training, I'd suggest getting in contact with an appropriately qualified sports nutritionist or dietitian who can help you figure that out. And in our next episode, T-10, we'll be taking a look at Brett's hydration needs and his current practices in training, as well as his gut tolerance of food and fluids, and get the ball rolling on some gut training that will hopefully pay off on race day. Now that episode will be in 2 weeks' time. But next week we have the next normal episode of Fueling Endurance, where I chat to Fuel In founder Scott Tyndall and answer the question, how do I work out my calorie needs? Which wasn't planned, but is probably quite fitting following today's podcast and what we've talked about. So just a reminder, if you do have a question that you'd like answered on the podcast, you can contact us at Fueling Endurance on Instagram, Facebook or Threads, or Fuel Endurance on X. And remember, there's now already 73 previous questions that have been answered on the podcast. So if you're new to the podcast, welcome. But you might like to go and check out the back catalogue, because you may find that there's something there that will be helpful to you. Most podcast apps only show you the last few episodes, but if you click back, you'll find the rest of them there going all the way back to November 2020. And of course, if your friends are asking about a particular nutrition issue for their training or racing, and you've heard it on the podcast, let them know. You'll get the credit for it and they'll find out the answer without bugging you again. And if you want to be notified every time a new episode is available, you can hit subscribe on the podcast app that you're listening to this on. You can also get your hands on the Fueling Endurance ebook from fuelingendurance.com, and that's fueling spelt with one L. And that outlines really a written summary of the first 2 years worth of episodes on the podcast. But that is it for today. Hopefully you found this interesting to have a listen to and follow along with Brett's journey. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with T-10 to continue that countdown to UTA. But in the meantime, have a great week and we'll see you back here for the next episode with Scott Tyndall looking at calorie needs of athletes. We'll see you then.